Familiar place for the Red Sox this year. 500. They're back at it for the 24th time this season. Sox sit at 80-80 now after losing 2-1 to the Tampa Bay Rays here at Fenway Park. Joe Weil with you. Thanks for joining us for Red Sox Review. And as much as it stinks to do these shows after a loss, it is also sad to know we only have a couple of more of these for the season. So this is where I want to hear from you guys, because it's been so much fun to talk to everybody through the ups and downs of this season. And what we want to talk about for this show, and we'll do this for the last couple shows, is just where you're at now that this season is almost done. Are you optimistic about the future? Are you frustrated by the way this team is ultimately gone in terms of not making the postseason? What do you want to do with Nick Pivetta? Do you want him back? Do you not want him back after a start like tonight where he was pretty good, but he got hung up with the loss? And I would figure more likely than not, it's over for Nick Pivetta in a Red Sox uniform. He seemed to be resigned to it a bit in the dugout tonight, even though there hasn't been a finality to it completely because of what the Sox and other teams decide they want to do with Nick Pivetta when he is an unrestricted free agent. But that's part of the story. But on top of that, this team now is in danger of falling below 500 or finishing with a record below 500 for a third consecutive season. Now, they're already missing the playoffs for a third consecutive year, but there's something more of a gut punch I think it would be if they finish below 500 in three consecutive years, when we're hoping that the arrow is pointing up for this team as the years go by in this quote-unquote rebuild. And I think that part of it is now in danger. Obviously, it is now at 80-80. And I have many thoughts about where this team, you know, has sunk to. I think that's a fair way to phrase it in some ways. And that's not to say there hasn't been positives. You and I both know that is not necessarily the case. That is, it is just a season where everything is depressing. It's not the Chicago White Sox. You and I both can acknowledge that. And I want to talk about that tonight. But there has been a feeling, you know, at least for me, being here at Fenway and enjoying the night. I mean, it's a great Boston September night, and I'm going to miss coming to Fenway. I know you are going to miss listening to these games, and especially with Joe, you know, only having a couple more broadcasts. And actually, we'd love to hear from people, you know, about what Joe Castiglione means to you. And we'll continue to do that throughout the weekend as well. The number to call in, 617-779-7937. Again, 617-779-7937. Zach Coe back at the flagship. And great to be reunited with Zach. It took me a little bit to throw out the number there, because I'm just getting back in the groove after the whole wedding and all that stuff. So I'm just trying to get my legs under me as we get here for the full swing of the hour. We'll take you all the way up to 11 p.m. And we, again, want to hear from you. We're going to play Alex Cora's sound in a bit. We'll try to get some Nick Pivetta's sound for you as well, so we can hear what he has to say after what may be his final start at Fenway Park in a Red Sox uniform. Again, I think that's a big story from tonight. And regardless of if you've been frustrated with Nick Pivetta or you've rode the highs, and there have been some highs, and I think it's fair to say that trading for Nick Pivetta was one of Chaim Bloom's best moves because of all the production he brought you from a starting pitching perspective. But I think this is probably it for him. And again, I want to discuss tonight all the question marks that currently exist with this Sox team. And this is the problem with where this season has gone, is that more and more question marks have risen for this group. And they're popping up. And I think question marks that we weren't necessarily thinking about as much, not to say starting rotation wasn't one, because I think we've all thought that. Although I would argue, and again, I want to hear from you, 617-779-7937. I want to hear from you what your hierarchy of concerns are going into the offseason. And for me, as now the second half is unfolded here, the starting rotation less and less is of concern. Not to say that it doesn't need to be bolstered with an arm or two. I would say yes. I know you would probably say yes. But you think about this bullpen and all the question marks going into next year. We had Chris Martin on the pregame show with Rob Bradford. And you think about him being gone. Some of the Kenley controversy today with his nameplate being taken down. And now he's not here for the rest of the regular season, this last series. And there are a lot of other names, you know, the guys that the Red Sox got at the trade deadline. Those guys, too. There's a lot still to be determined about what next year looks like. We saw some of the future, though, here on hand because Christian Campbell was here. So that was exciting. But more and more question marks have popped up now that we've gotten to the end of the season. And again, I want to hear from you what you're most concerned about. So one more time, 617-779-7937, the number to call in. Again, 617-779-7937. But let's now hear from Alex Cora after this 2-1 loss to the Tampa Bay Rays.
Excellent. Fastball come in. Who at some point used both sides of the plate, went up, down. The walk put him in the bad spot. We were talking about that, but overall, a really good one.
He seemed pretty emotional in the dugout. Do you think this kind of...
He'll talk about it, yeah. I mean, he likes it here. He likes the atmosphere. He likes to compete. Towards the end, he was sitting there in my seat, whatever, if you want to call it. And he's like, this is a nice view. I'm like, yeah. It's better when Kyle Schwarber hits it out of the ballpark, you know? Like, it's a good seat. No, but all kidding aside, that he works so hard. I mean, it's intense. We talk about it. And today he was talking about, like, the emotions and having flashbacks and all that stuff, whatever. He'll explain it. But I think overall, you know, in 2020, this organization got him for, two relievers, right? And... came in, he said something today towards the end that it caught my attention, you know, with everything that has been going on here for years, you know, the trades and all that stuff. When he got here, he felt comfortable because he knew he was surrounded by guys that been there, done that, right? He knew that Nate was going to take care of him, Chris was going to take care of him, Eduardo, you know, like they had the experience of winning. And for him, it was just to show up here and just work, just stay quiet and follow them. And that was very interesting, you know. I never saw it that way, you know. And he was good, you know. He was good for us. He is good for us.
Alex, even though he hasn't necessarily been a winner, like guys like that, how much, experience with this team could be valuable for you?
I mean, we'll talk about that whenever we have to, but he's a veteran. You know, he posts, he knows what it takes here in the weight room, in the training room. Just, you know, he got demoted last year. He complained one day, and then the next day he showed up, and he's like, I'm going to the bullpen, you know? So he understands how this works. And he's good for any team. Let's put it that way.
Is there a performance of this that stands out to you?
The breaking ball to Soto, that was a good one. That one will always be there. And then the game against Tampa, Kiermaier hits that ball to right center, the weird rule, and then we got out of it, and he was like, you know, high stepping all the way to the dugout. You know, so. The Oakland one was good a few years ago. This year he struck out 10 in a row, right, or something like that early on. It's one of those, like, but coming out of the bullpen was always cool. I mean, he hated it, but he pitched a big one in Seattle last year. He went 8 out of the bullpen, he started actually, but he came from the bullpen and just ready to pitch, man. He's ready to pitch every day.
All right, so that's Alex Cora talking after the Red Sox 2-1 loss against the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. Joe Al with you here on Red Sox Review. And we want to hear from you, 617-779-7937. And Alex Cora with some praise for Nick Pivetta here in these postgame comments. And you heard him toward the end highlight some of the bigger moments that Nick Pivetta has had in his Sox career. It was fun to relive in the pregame show where we were playing some of Joe's calls of Nick Pivetta striking out a batter to end the 13th inning in Game 3 of the ALDS, and then what subsequently followed the Christian Vasquez two-run home run in a game that the Red Sox won in a wild way. I mean, it's fun to relive that game where, you know, of course you had Hunter Renfro and the ground rule double, and obviously that was all incidental, but then Nick Pivetta finishing out that outing by getting a strikeout, stranding two. He tossed four innings, struck out seven, and was really the star of the night outside of the Vasquez two-run home run. He was huge, and we will never forget that moment. And as Will said in the pregame, and I thought it was a good point, like just listening to the audio of it, you miss nights like that at Fenway Park where this place is rocking and the fans are fired up and you have really cool moments like that where Nick Pivetta coming through in a big spot helped this team win a playoff game. They ultimately win that series. And then Alex Cora pointing out the game 162 where Nick Pivetta unleashes a devastating breaking ball on Juan Soto to clinch a win in that game. Red Sox make the postseason, and then again, that leads to the wild card win, the four-game series win over Tampa Bay before losing in six to the Houston Astros. And I think there's two parts of this. One is that Nick Pivetta's Red Sox career might be over after tonight's performance and this season because he is an unrestricted free agent. And we want to hear from you about what you think of that because I think I'm okay with it, you know, in terms of the Sox deciding if they don't want to go about re-signing him. I think it kind of makes sense because, you know, you've been there, done that. You kind of know what you have in Nick Pivetta, and I think it would be more wise to try to go for a big fish here in free agency, knowing that you have three homegrown guys, Crawford, Houck, and then Bayo, and then Lucas Giolito should be back next year. You have some depth, and if you can get that anchor at the top, that obviously would make things so much better, and that should be what the Sox should be striving for this offseason, getting somebody like Max Fried or Corbin Burns or somebody of that ilk, and maybe not a guy like Pivetta who is, at his best, you know, a three, but more probably more fitting as a four. So that's one part of it. But then, I guess, again, the other part of it is, like, again, we're playing out the string here, and there is something kind of depressing about it. In the sense of where this team stood at the All-Star break, how exciting things were, and the youth part of it is still exciting, but Alex Cora, as he said on Wednesday, I mean, this team blew a golden chance to make the postseason with the way these other teams around baseball, especially the American League, and actually more specifically the American League, the way that they didn't get the job done consistently down the stretch, yet the Tigers go 55-63, but they go on this epic run. They make it into the postseason, and I think at this point you could say they deserved it. But a team like Kansas City that's really faltered down the stretch, and once again, last I checked that they were losing, and they did. No, I beg your pardon. I checked that they lost. They fell 3-0 against Atlanta. So again, that's a team you could have jumped, and you didn't, and it's over. And again, we're just playing out these final two games. We have fun moments like seeing Nick Pivetta, you know, ultimately get a nice hand here from the crowd, but it could have been so much more. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Paul in Westfield. What's going on, Paul?
Well, Joe, it's been a while, and it's wild this year about, on the same night the 121 losing White Sox we joked about, it happened, and where you said 24th time back and forth from 500 is, yay, we're a winning seasoner. Damn, we sucked that bad. And now the Tigers are on a roll on the show. Kansas City's dying in tow. And then, like you said, I have a couple questions, but the answer to the big question this year is, you joke about the fans are up on the ledge ready to run with no parachute in tow. And here comes the pitching and offense, and they go, on your mark, you set, go, with disappearing the pitching and offense since the All-Star break. That was just a shocker. And as you said, Detroit went the other way. You know, and there's also the wicked good weather, the wicked funny games where just tons of home runs and, you know, Durant getting to the most doubles at 25 ahead of everyone except Ted Williams. Rafe going crazy, Durant smoking it from the low inside bat to the furthest part of the park. You know, there's been some good moments, just give and take, you know. But overall, I think it was a lot more exciting than we expected in both the good and the bad, because sometimes it was awesome and sometimes it was ugly at the beginning of the year when they couldn't play defense.
Paul, I agree. It was kind of both sides of the spectrum. But the part that I just cannot let go, and I appreciate your call, Paul. It's always great to hear from you. And, you know, people like you, I miss when I was away here for a little bit. If you want to grab Paul's line, 617-779-7937. The part that I get so frustrated by is that there was such a golden opportunity for this team to gain a playoff spot. And I think there's something to be said now that for three consecutive years, when the playoff field has been expanded to six teams in each league, the Sox have not found a way to get into the dance. And especially this year, with an American League that top to bottom was pretty mediocre. You have the Yankees and Guardians right now fighting for the top seed. And if we're going to be really honest with each other, neither of these teams are all that good. I think the Yankees, if you want to, if just to call a spade, listen, they have two of the best players in the sport. They have their Ruth and Gehrig, and from, if you want to bring in a Red Sox analogy, they have their Ortiz and Manny. They do. But outside of that, as we've seen from that group, they have a lot of other players that don't necessarily provide a lot consistently. Not bad players, but they have some duds in their lineup. And I look at that. I look at the Guardians that frankly, you know, again, they don't slug a whole lot outside of Jose Ramirez. And I don't look at them as some juggernaut. But more importantly, the wild card teams. These wild card teams are all pathetic outside of the Orioles. Now I don't want to denigrate the Tigers because I'm in awe of what they've accomplished, going 31-11 over their last 42 games. I mean, that is an unreal run, and they deserve their flowers, and especially that city too, because to go as long as they did without a team that had made the playoffs, I think that's a great baseball story. But you look at the Royals, you know, who have played miserable baseball here down the stretch, 85-75, and when they do make the playoffs, or it looks like they will, that'll be kind of a cool story as well. But it just stinks from our perspective that this team just somehow couldn't find its way into the dance. So many blown leads. The offense just, again, over the last month and a half has been so inconsistent. And this is why we are where we are, talking about this team missing the playoffs. And it is aggravating because, again, it was right in front of them. And they had a good first half, and it just all fell apart. And you could start to sense it falling apart a bit because of the way things happened in the Dodgers series where they lost those leads. And everything kind of spiraled from that point. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to my man Mike from Buffalo. What's going on, Mike?
Well, you know, I talked last week, and I said I wasn't going to call again. But you know what? The bullpen, I agree with you. They have to redo that. That stunk it a lot of times. But I'll tell you what. The last month, they didn't hit their way out of a paper bag. And let alone, you talk about teams that were folding. How about Minnesota? I think they won about four games out of the last.
12-24, Mike, over their last 36 games coming into tonight.
Yeah, it's typical tonight. One run. I just don't know how they can't score any runs in that ballpark. And their starting pitching this month hasn't been that bad, I don't think. Do you?
Their starting pitching? No, it's been good.
There's just too many guys. You know, Duran will get two. He's had a great year. He'll get two or three hits, then he doesn't hit for two or three. Yoshida will get three, then he doesn't hit. Endeavors for the last month. I mean, you and I could have hit better than him
Yeah, right. And he'd been hurt, Mike. And actually, I want you to finish your point, but I just wanted to point this out. So coming into tonight, last 29 games, Red Sox starters ranked third in Major League Baseball with a 2.64 ERA. That's how good they were.
I know, and I said it all along, and especially games against Tampa, they just don't hit their pitching for some reason. And O'Neill, I hope that I don't want to see O'Neill back here next year, but I think they need to get somebody to help Devers and O'Neill and Rafael. I would let him go. He has no idea where the strike.
Well, he's locked up now. Now with Rafaela, he's locked up long term. So,
what the hell are they going to do with him? Don't they have a batting coach to have him look at a film at some of the pitches he swings at? Why, my God, he swings the pitches up in the press box for crying out loud! All right, I'll let somebody else have a chance. So,
thanks, Mike.
Have a good winter, and hopefully we can pick up three or four players. But, you know, 33,000 tonight. John Henry's laughing at everybody. 33,000. I wouldn't sell them. Why would you sell them? They're going to get 30,000 no matter if they win or lose. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. I miss Mike. And I hope, as Mike hopes, that this team adds in the offseason and really tries to bolster this roster. And with Rafaela, I am very intrigued to see what next year looks like for him. We're going to hit a break in one moment. And again, if you want to call in, 617-779-7937. We'll continue to hit calls on the other side. But I'm very intrigued what Rafaela looks like next year, because now he's obviously not swinging at pitches in the press box, but Mike wasn't that far off about the fact that Rafaela can't contain himself when he's swinging at certain pitches. I'm a big fan of the player. I think he's a big-time player. I feel good about him in clutch spots. Like, I really do feel confident when Sadon's up in a big spot. But there's still a lot to be refined from the hitting perspective. Maybe next year you have him, you know, play specifically in one spot, and maybe that frees him up mentally a bit, even though I never felt like he was overwhelmed this year. But you'd hope there's an adjustment on that end. And I look at him, and there's so many times he's looked like a rookie this year, but then there are moments where he looks like he could be an all-star. There are not as many as the times he looks like a rookie, but it's those other times that really makes me optimistic about what he could ultimately turn into. And hey, listen, he was an AL Rookie of the Year candidate this year, at the very least. 617-779-7937. We'll continue to hit on calls. Dan in the car will get to you when we come back from this break. We will also play Nick Pivetta's post-game comments for you and what could have been his final start as a member of the Red Sox. All that and more coming up on Red Sox Review right after this on WEI.
This is fun, so be sure to ask for Corvus at your favorite bar, restaurant, and liquor store. Corvus. I know you will love them all.
Hey guys, it's Fitzy. Join me and the WEEI Street Team at the 2024 Central MA Out of the Darkness Walk to Prevent Suicide at Polar Park in Worcester on September 28th. Register at afsp.org/Central MA.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
That's where we are. 160 games into the season. The Red Sox lose 2-1 tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays. Joe Weil with you here at an empty Fenway Park. I'm going to miss this site. I really will. When I'm doing these Red Sox review shows at home, it's very quiet. And it's always an interesting contrast after, you know, the fans being out here and hoping that this team can turn around things at home, and that has not been the case this year. More times than not, though, the home fans have actually gone home upset because this team is now 37-42 here at Fenway Park. 37-42. Not great. Yeah, there you go. Not great. Zach Coe, by the way, back at WEI. Great work as always by Zach. Love Zach. MVP of the season. One of them. Again, we want to hear from you. 617-779-7937 after the team bangs out just six hits, one run. One bright spot was Vaughn Grissom with three hits. I've liked what I've seen out of him now in two out of his last three games where he's posted three hit efforts. And that'll be hopefully this is one of those little things that carries over into next year where Maybe he feels, you know, good that he ended his season on a somewhat high note, or on a decent note that he can feel okay about going into next year with how much of this season has been a disaster from the injuries, not to mention the fact that he was traded for a guy that's going to win the National League Cy Young Award. The only thing I would say about any of that, this whole discussion about Vaughn Grissom, is that I still don't feel like the full story has been written. At the same time, Christian Campbell was honored before the game for being the Red Sox Minor League Offensive Player of the Year. He was the Eastern League MVP. He also was the Baseball America Minor League Player of the Year, which if you don't think that's a big deal, go look at the players that are on that list. So I'm excited to see that competition in spring training next year. I'm still excited about this young group. You should be too. But I also think that there should be a disappointing feeling, you know, within you about this team not making the playoffs. And to me, it's the biggest bummer considering where the American League was at this year. I know you feel that way back at home, wherever you're listening, in the car. It was a missed opportunity this season. Alex Cora knows it. I think everybody knows it. It's a learning lesson in some ways. And who knows? Maybe this propels the team next year to new heights. We get back to postseason baseball here at Fenway Park. That's the hope. Because, and again, in playing the highlight in our pregame show of what this place sounded like in 2021, even though they didn't win the World Series, this place was so loud. You hear it from so many people. 2021 wildcard game, maybe the loudest this place has ever been. And you go back and watch those other games in that run, and this place was jumping.
To that point, me and my buddies, we were there for, I think it was game 3 of the ALCS when Schwarber hit that grand slam. That was the loudest I've ever heard any sporting event ever. And, like, honestly, that was the most fun game I've ever been to. So, like, it just goes to show you what these fans and what this park can sound like when the team is competitive and, like, competing for a World Series.
Yeah, and you go back and watch any of those things, Zach, it's like, man, why can't things be like that now? You know, and that game was great. I remember that game for the Schwarber Grand Slam. I also remember Eddie Rodriguez, you know, doing the pointing
at the watch.
Yes,
yep.
Exactly. And Alex Cora right away being like, "Stop, don't do that." And I don't know if I'll ever forget Laz Diaz missing that breaking ball, which should have been a called strike to get Jason Castro in game 4.
And then everything completely unraveled.
I am convinced the Sox would have won the World Series that year if that call was a strike.
I agree. I mean, it's tough to blame it all on that one call, but they had all the momentum in the world, and just like I said, it just completely unraveled from that missed call or that missed ball, and then they end up losing that game, losing the next one.
And like that series, this year the offense completely undone here in the last month and a half for the most part. Again, that was the case tonight. 6 hits, 1 run. Let's go back to the phones. And again, if you want to chime in, 617-779-7937. We will play Nick Pivetta's postgame comments here in one moment, but we want to go back to the phones first. Let's go to Dan in the car. He wants to talk about Trevor's story. What's going on, Dan?
Hey, guys. How are you? Hopefully you can hear me.
We got you loud and clear.
Hey, Trevor's story, I get 2 points, actually. Trevor's story, I think, gates a little bit. Does anybody feel comfortable with him hitting? I mean, it's an out every time there's a breaking pitch or anything even near the zone. And the other guy, I think that, well, he's an offensive first catcher. Connor Wong has totally been unacceptable behind the plate handling that pitching staff. And I'd like to hear you guys talk about that. I know those are kind of two underrated things, but I feel like those two guys have skated along the way all year long.
Yeah,
thank you,
Dan. I appreciate the call. I disagree with I disagree on both premises in terms of both of those guys skating on both of, on the things that Dan brought up. So we'll go piece by piece here. Trevor's story has not skated. Everybody knows how injury prone he's been, and I think at this point, we're all aware, like, this guy just hasn't hit like he did in Colorado. It's such a contrast numbers-wise with what he did in Colorado compared to what he's doing here in Boston. And, I mean, you get excited when there's a 2-3 hit night, and yet this guy's signed 6 years, $140 million. And he was a perennial all-star in Colorado. I liked the move when they made it, but I liked it more in the context, this is the caveat, I liked it in the context of bringing back Xander Bogaerts. Now, with the way he swung the bat in San Diego, that's looking like the Red Sox actually made the right move. As much as we miss Xander.
I have a question on that.
Yeah, go for it.
So if the Red Sox just signed Bogaerts for the, I think it was like a $680 million deal that Altuve got that was reportedly what he was looking for, does that deal look as bad if the Red Sox do that? Because I don't think it does.
Say it one more time. What was it? What deal?
So at the time, the rumors were that Bogaerts was looking for a deal similar to the six-year, $180 million deal that Jose Altuve got. If that's what the Red Sox gave him, would it look as bad as the 11-year, $270 that the Padres gave him? Because I don't think it would.
I don't think it would either. And I guess the question still is, though, Zach, like, what would that have been right? You know, like, in terms of the production that Bogaerts has already given San Diego, which through 2 years, this is his slash line. 277 average, 333 on base, and a 416 slug. And this is in ages 30 and 31, which are supposed to be the prime years of the contract. So I actually do think it would have still looked bad, but the difference, Zach, in my mind, I'm curious what you think. The difference in my mind is that Bogaerts already had the equity with the fan base to maybe not perform as well as he did prior to signing a contract, that even a hypothetical like that one. Like, he's already won two World Series with the Sox. He'd already had all these great years. Whereas with the Padres, he's a whole new player that hasn't done anything for the organization that they can look back on and say, okay, well, at least Bogey did this. And that's where Trevor Story, you know, you look at what he's done now in a Sox uniform since he signed this contract, that's what he loses. Or what he doesn't have, I should say, compared to a guy like Xander Bogaerts, where you would just re-sign him with the money that you've given to Trevor Story, or maybe it would have been a little bit more than that. Like, he's got no equity. Each of the 3 years that Story's been with the Sox, they haven't made the playoffs, and only now has he played 162 games in his Red Sox career. Tonight was his 162nd game. And we know it's not for lack of effort. We know he cares, but the proof is in the pudding a little bit.
Yeah, and I do wonder if last year for Bogaerts was a bit of an adjustment period, because obviously he signed with the Red Sox as a 16-year-old and played with the Red Sox through the year that he left. So, like, I wonder if it was a bit of like, oh, bleep, like, I'm not in Boston anymore. Like, I have to adjust to life with a whole different ballpark, a whole new group of teammates, guys that I hadn't come up through the farm system with, and a whole new fan base. So, obviously, we see guys struggle to adjust in their first year after spring training. But I think where the biggest hole that Bogaerts left is leadership. Like, whenever things were going bad, like, Devers makes a couple errors, Bogaerts is there, throws his arm around his shoulder and picks him up, or things are going bad, he's the first guy in front of the microphone talking to the media. It really feels like they didn't have that at all this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially from the position player perspective. And Zach, I don't know if they necessarily needed one for a significant portion of this year, but then when things started falling by the wayside, you know, after the All-Star break, that's where it would have been nice to have somebody like that. And from a position player perspective, they just didn't have that. Now, going back to the overall point that Matt was making about Story, this is the difference in slash lines for Trevor Story in a Colorado Rockies uniform compared to a Red Sox uniform. This is coming into the night. Story with the Rockies, 272 average, 340 on base, 523 slug, so an 863 OPS. With the Sox now, this was coming into the night, 231 average, 295 on base, 397 slug, a 692 OPS. And we know last year he never found his rhythm at the plate. This year, came into the season healthy, but then got hurt very quickly. And again, it's unfortunate because we know that he's trying, we know he cares, but the production has just not been there. And I feel similarly to Matt in the car about, or Dan in the car about the way I feel with him at the plate. I know what he's capable of. We've seen this from Trevor Story in his career. We know he can be a great player. It's just been a long time since we've seen it consistently on both ends, like he's being paid. The other point about Connor Wong, I think it's been a pretty consistent thing that's been brought up as it's related to Connor Wong with the defensive part of what he brings to the table. I mean, he's one of the worst catchers in the sport in blocks above average and in framing. Pop time is above average, so you like that part of it. But I think there is a major question mark for him in terms of his overall future and where that lies within this organization. Because you do have Kyle Teal waiting in the wings, and eventually he's going to be called up here, and he's going to be getting a significant amount of reps behind catcher. Do they split those reps? I don't know. Do they try to move Connor Wong, you know, to a spot like the middle infield where he played in college? Maybe that's where he ultimately lands. I don't know. The one thing I'll say is that if they make that decision, they better try to get that ball rolling in spring training instead of trying to do it in the middle of the season, where then it seems like he's playing very out of position. That's where I get concerned, where it's related to Connor Wong. I want to make sure we hit this before we go to our next break and then ultimately have to head out here for the show on Red Sox Review. Again, Nick Pivetta made the start tonight for the Sox. He lost tonight's game, but he did pitch pretty well. This could be his final outing in a Red Sox uniform. Let's hear what he had to say after this 2-1 loss here to Tampa Bay.
I think they were pretty strong and pretty consistent throughout the day. You know, a lot of memories, a lot to be grateful for.
When you walked off the mound, yeah, I guess you took your cap and also kind of dug out and gave it to the I guess you take a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's my last start so far from, you know, me being a Red Sox. And, it's been a hefty 4 years, almost 5 years for me. And, you know, there's a lot, like I said, to be grateful for, a lot of opportunities to be given and try to take advantage of every single one of that. But also, I've had a lot of help along the way, and there's been a lot of people around that have helped guide me, and a lot of them are in the dugout and have been in the dugout, and a lot of the coaching staff, so it's really emotional for me.
When you look back on your time here, is there a moment that kind of stands out to you, or a moment that you're proudest of?
I don't think it's a single moment. I think it's just the accumulation of it all. You know, there's not too many moments where you get given an opportunity like I have, and to be with a really great organization is like the Red Sox. You know, I'm very lucky, and I'm very grateful for that.
Do you characterize yourself as being vocal as something that you work on?
Of course, as always, Boston's become quite the home for me and my wife, Kristen, and we really enjoy it here. We've become very comfortable. So, of course, that would always be on my mind. Yeah, I mean, I would characterize myself as a completely different pitcher. I think the amount of growth that I've had in the 4 years, due to the fact of just, you know, the teammates, the coaches, the training staff, just the whole organization has helped me kind of guide me along my path. And then the adjustments that I've made, have kind of led me to this moment and what I'm kind of capable of. I think I haven't gotten to my ceiling yet. I think there's a lot more.
That 2020 season was strange for everybody. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that trade, you know, at that time, could have led to, you know, what's happening
in the last. To be honest with you, I had no idea what was going on. It was a really tough time for, you know, I think me in general, just overall, and I think for the world in general, too. So to think that I could get so lucky to be in the seat I am today is something I'm just very happy about and very lucky for.
I think you kind of sat in the dugout for a moment after you came off the mound. What were some of the thoughts kind of going through your mind at that time?
A lot of the thoughts that I've just kind of just talked about, but also kind of just like soaking in the air and just enjoying the crowd and enjoying just being on the bench and, you know, being surrounded by my teammates, the coaching staff, and just enjoying a Red Sox game as well.
The run of 2021 a lot, you know, just your emotions and stuff. Mm-hmm. How tough just these last 3 years just not to be able to kind of, for the team not to be able to take that next step and get tough?
Yeah, I think the road to greatness is a weird one, and there's a lot of different turns and a lot of different variations to it. I think that through the 3 years there has been growth and there has been change, and I think it's growing up to a moment that I think this organization, this team is very capable of doing. I mean, from hands down, everybody shows up and does the right things. And I think it's just gaining of experience and gaining of developing the right group of individuals to come together and, you know, just accomplish the overall greatest goal. That's winning World Series.
These next 2 days, you're just going to try to enjoy yourself?
Yeah, I'll just, you know, my job's done today and I don't have to worry about anything else. And just enjoy being around the people that I love to be around every single day, and just taking it all in and, you know, just being happy about it all.
As far as the competition on the field, what did you think about your season finale?
Today, I mean, I walked a guy that led to a momentum change, and I wasn't able to execute a curveball to Lau.
Respecting that you've already kind of talked about some of the emotion, but that moment of walking off the mound, like first seeing Alex and knowing that, like, you know, are you like, no, I want to, you know, at that moment, are you hoping?
I'm just more concerned about what we're going to do to help us win. You know, we had Penrod come in, and he'd been doing a really good job. And not that he didn't do a bad job. It's always up. You know, stuff happens. He's a young kid, but, you know, he's done a really good job up to that moment. And that's who AC had confidence in. And I'm out there until I get the ball taken out of my hand, and the ball was taken out of my hand. Whatever happened after that happens, but, you know, I just go as hard as I can until that moment happens.
And then to acknowledge the crowd, like, is that something that was natural in that walk back off the mound?
Yeah, I mean, the Fenway fans have been extremely kind to me throughout the years I've been here, and I appreciate them, and I appreciate them showing up and in full force all the nights that they show up and cheering us on and having the positivity. I know it can be hard sometimes, but I think the acknowledgement to them is, you know, they're the ones that, you know, drive us every single day, that we want to win a championship for them too.
All right, so that's Nick Mavetta talking after what may be his final start in a Red Sox uniform. Remember, he is an unrestricted free agent after this season. And I think that was a very interesting post-game press conference there from Nick Mavetta, and then you couple it with what Alex Cora said. And the reason I say that is I thought there was one quote in Nick Pavetta's comments that stood out to me. He said, "I don't think I've gotten to my ceiling yet." And then he acknowledged that he said, "I think that there's a lot more. There's a lot more." And that was part of the story for Nick Pavetta during his time with the Sox. Now, what here's the positive of it. We talked about the curveball he threw to Juan Soto in game 163. We talked about how he pitched in the postseason in 2021. And those are the bright spots of this tenure here for Nick Pavetta. I think what's also interesting, and then on top of that, you think about how the Red Sox got Nick Pavetta and what a great trade that was by Chaim Bloom to get Nick Pavetta and Connor Siebold in exchange for Brandon Workman, Heath Hembry, and cash. So they basically gave away a couple rental relievers and got back a guy that was in the rotation consistently for 4 years. That was a great trade. Nick Pavetta provided this team with a lot of good innings, but you do always, you think about his time here, there was always this desire of wanting just a little bit more, and that's a part of the equation as well. We saw flashes of that dominance, especially at the end of last year, and I was hoping that would translate into this season in a way that was different than ultimately how it came out. So I think you've looked at the overall tenure. It was a solid run for Nick Pavetta, but could it have been more? I think so. I'm sure some other team will feel that way going into free agency. And again, nothing is set in stone. Maybe he does come back. Thought it was cool hearing him talk about how much he enjoys pitching for the Red Sox and what it means to be a part of this team. And he said it's become a home for him. That's all great stuff. You hope athletes embrace the city like he has. And I always enjoy the fire that he brought out there. Will he come back? We'll wait and see. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up here on Red Sox Review. Again, Tampa Bay a 2-1 winner over the Sox. We're now back at 500 for the 24th time this season at 80-80. Back right after this on WEI. One of the great moments of Nick Pavetta's Red Sox career that may have seen its final start here at Fenway Park. And maybe the final start of Nick Pivetta's Red Sox career. And he was pretty good tonight. Unfortunately, the offense was not. 2-1 the final. Tampa Bay a winner over the Red Sox. Pivetta, 6 2/3 innings tonight. 4 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Sox with just 6 hits tonight. 1 extra base hit came from Tristan Casas. And only 1 run that they were able to push across in the 7th inning. And another tough offensive night for this group that has had far too many here in the second half of the season. So they're back at 500 for the 24th time this year. And now the question is, how do they ultimately finish? Is it at 500? Do they go 1-1 over these next two games? Can they pick up victories in these next two games and finish above 500 for the first time in 3 years? Or is it that final scenario of them losing these next two games? They finish below 500 for the third straight year. In the end, all these scenarios have the Sox out of the playoffs. So it's splitting hairs. But
whatever gets them the better draft pick.
Well, and that's how I think a lot of people see it, Zach. But is there anything, is there any part of it in your mind that is worse if, you know, just by the sheer fact that they will have been below 500 for 3 straight years? Does that matter at all to you?
No, like I said, I don't care. If they're not going to make the playoffs, I would rather them finish with as worse of a record as possible so that they can just get a better draft pick.
And I think a lot of people feel that way. I think you're right. I think ultimately it doesn't matter. You miss the playoffs, you miss the playoffs. And they have. But we still have 2 more games. The beauty of it, we get to hear Joe Castiglione on the mic 2 more times with Will Fleming. And I certainly enjoyed getting a chance to listen to that duo tonight, and we will have a chance to do that both tomorrow night or tomorrow, and then on Sunday before the season wraps up. And that's really the special part of this weekend. And I know texts have been rolling in tonight about Joe and what he means to people, and we've had a chance to hear it in the broadcast as well. He is obviously a special person to all of us, and the beauty of this weekend is we get to enjoy him for 2 more games. Hopefully they're W's. The Sox could finish above 500 if they win both those games. Might not matter to anybody out there, but try to conjure up something for you as we play out the string. Again, Sox lose here 2-1 tonight against Tampa Bay. Thank you to Zach Coe. I think we have 1 more show together on Sunday, which I'm excited about. You have Cooper Boardman tomorrow for the MassMutual pregame show. That starts at 3:10. And then first pitch at 4:10. Cut across 3:05 first pitch on what will be Joe Castiglione Day here at Fenway Park. Should be awesome. Thank you for listening to Red Sox Review. And look forward to having all you tune in tomorrow and Sunday to hear Joe on the call for these final 2 games. Thanks for listening to Red Sox Review. Have a great night.